Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time cupcake baker.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that has, between the three of us, attended film festivals everywhere, from Italy and Africa to Los Angeles and Vancouver and every place in between. Nathan just returned from his latest quest, that of seeing as many films as he could at the New Orleans Overlook Film Festival, which is billed as a, quote, four-day celebration of all things horror held in America's most haunted city, unquote. He'll give us a rundown about what he saw and what we might expect to open here in our own Lilac City. First, though, the three of us will discuss the independent feature Sacramento, directed and co-written by and starring Michael Angarano. Let's begin there. Speaking of film festivals, Sacramento is typical of the kinds of films that you're likely to see at your average film fest. In other words, small productions starring B and C level cast members, or sometimes your A level actor looking for a different kind of project to work in. Ones that tend to follow a non-mainstream kind of storyline, and that often don't offer a kind of feel-good ending you would expect from so many popular movies. Not that Sacramento avoids all the traits of something that would headline your neighborhood multiplex. It is a road movie, after all, and at least one of the movie stars, Kristen Stewart, is recognizable, having forged a career post her Twilight years. Director and co-screenwriter Michael Angarano, an actor who has been working in and around movies and television since he was an eight-year-old, stars as Ricky, the friend of Glenn, played by Michael Cera, who shows up at Glenn's house uninvited and unwanted, actually. But it is through the road trip that the two end up making from Los Angeles to, yes, Sacramento, that reveals the secrets and troubles torturing both characters. Maya Erskine, who is married to Angarano, plays the object of Ricky's wavering affections, and Stewart plays Glenn's way too patient pregnant wife. Sacramento, in the end, has a few humorous moments, but little to say that hasn't been done elsewhere. But then, that can be said of so many other films that seldom make it out of the festival circuit, which, for some reason, this one managed to do.
Yes, it did manage to do, and I'm not sure exactly why, and we'll talk about that in a little bit more detail. But this is sort of a passion friend project because Angarano not only directs it, he writes it, he stars in it, and then he has his wife in real life, Maya Erskine, he has his dad, he has his baby, are all in this film. And I kept wondering the whole time that we were watching this, because you were talking about in Sacramento, like A-list actors. And I would say that these actors are A-minus actors, except for Kristen Stewart. And so I kept wondering, why did she attach herself to this project? And it turns out she was besties or dated Michael Angarano back in the day. So that made some sense, because to me, I just couldn't quite buy her character. But we'll talk about that in a moment, because she was the sort of Field of Dreams wife in many ways that seemed unrealistic to me. So I think that there was a good underlying concept for this film, but I'm not sure that Angarano brings it ultimately to fruition completely. So it feels like maybe the script needed one more edit or something in order to make it truly pop. But Michael Cera, I always like watching him, and we've watched him throughout the years. And so his character was annoying to my way of thinking. I mean, he's just like filled
super
with
annoying.
So much anxiety, and you're just like, you know, want to say, get over yourself. And then we start to discover not only is Kristen Stewart, who plays his wife, 8 months pregnant, it looks like, he also is concerned about whether his job is going to be there, because he, you know, now has a family coming and his job situation seems a little precarious. And then Michael Angarano shows up, and he's sort of like this, you know, we talked about on previous shows, A Real Pain with Jesse Eisenberg and Kieran Culkin. And it seemed as though this was A Real Pain light in some ways, at least the way I perceived it, because Michael Angarano shows up and he's not as charming or charismatic as the Kieran Culkin character was in A Real Pain. But we still are kind of attracted to him. The movie starts out with this little vignette of his meeting, you know, this woman on a camping trip. And then it completely shifts in terms of time and geographic focus and everything. So we're not really sure how that's going to come back together, but it does for us. And so I think in this particular movie, one of the conceits is the reason why they're going to Sacramento is because they're going to bury Ricky's father's ashes. So they're going to scatter them. And so we find out over time that his dad actually died more than a year ago, although he's still kind of in this melancholic state. And so that's part of the revelation that Dan talked about in his intro, that we do find out some of their secrets or whatever during the course of this trip or these travels. So this film did not completely work for me. So in Sacramento, the name of the film, that's their final destination for this road trip. I really liked Maya Erskine, but of course I've liked her, you know, since she was in Pen 15, the young adult TV show where she plays a seventh or eighth grader, which sounds improbable, but for whatever reason it worked. She was also in Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Donald Glover within the past 2 years, and I thought she did a good job there. So she's shown that she's not just a comedic actor, because I think that's, you know, sort of how she originally
has been typed,
sort of, came on the scene. But I just couldn't buy Kristen Stewart being married to Michael Cera. I mean, I buy Amy Schumer in her most recent series being married to Michael Cera, but I just could not wrap my mind around that relationship. And Kristen Stewart also plays the most patient, not long-suffering, but the most patient wife imaginable. And again, I struggled with that a little bit. So to my way of thinking, there were some really good things about it. It wasn't as funny as I thought it might have, could have, should have, would have been. But, you know, definitely a small movie. No need to rush to see it on the big screen. Don't know how soon it will be streaming. But I'm curious to hear what the two of you think.
Well, I did like the two central performances in Sacramento, even if I didn't always like the characters they were playing. It's sort of interesting. You talked about the casting. It's interesting that Angarano has cast Michael Cera as his foil because they've both been acting since they were kids. They were playing the same types of roles in the mid-2000s and early 2010s. They're both named Michael. And they're even kind of styled similarly in the movie. I would say that they're flip sides of the same coin, but they may just be the same side. Like, they seem like very similar guys. And I related to certain elements of the movie because I'm about the same age as them. And I can certainly relate to that feeling of your life beginning to move on. You're becoming more of an adult and settling down while you see some of your oldest friends kind of struggle to make that same transition. And you're reconnecting with old friends in the way that they do in Sacramento. But you still feel kind of like kids a little bit because you're not far enough away from your adolescence that you feel like you're fully grown up. And that's what this movie is kind of dealing with. But I feel like too many of the plot developments feel borderline sitcom-y to me. The ways in which Ricky is lying about his dad's death, how he's been to all of these support groups and sort of knows the terminology so he can weaponize them. This emotional breakdown that happens near the end of the movie that kind of brings all the plot points together just didn't feel real to me. And I was also thinking about A Real Pain. Now, I know that it's a coincidence that these movies are coming out around the same time because there's no way that they could have known about the other. But I was just thinking about that film, which is also about two guys reconnecting after being estranged. And that movie has real conversations in it. It has real feeling in it. And this one just never really got to that point, even though I did appreciate the camaraderie between the two guys. I did believe that they were friends. There's this,
or they had been friends back in the day.
And there's kind of this lovely moment where they're with these two women they've met in a bar and they just revert to their old kind of adolescent selves. And I enjoyed elements of that. And I will say, as somebody that has spent a considerable amount of time in Sacramento, my wife is from there, I maybe wanted a little bit more Sacramento in the movie. There are a couple places where she said, oh, I've been there. Oh, I know exactly what building that is. So Lady Bird remains the definitive Sacramento film.
Absolutely.
Its status is cemented still.
You bring up the scene with them and the two women in the bar. Totally did not work. There is no way these two UFC women are going to be attracted in any way, shape, or form to these two young guys. My favorite parts of the movie were both every time the camera went on Maya Erskine. I just absolutely loved what she did. There's a scene in which she goes, we can do this, but there's going to be no sex. And then she winks. And he goes, did you just wink at me? She goes, No, I didn't. And she winks again.
Yeah, yeah.
She's
such really funny.
Great,
yeah, I love her.
And that character is unexpected in a lot of
yeah,
ways.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
Exactly.
Because it does bring things together mm-hmm. again. Yeah. But the thing that I did like about it was you don't really know how are these guys ever friends back in the day? Because Glenn, the Michael Cera character, has this other friend and he keeps reaching out to him and he's rejected. But then we find out a lot of memories center on this convertible that
Betsy.
He had, that Ricky had restored mm-hmm. for Glenn. And so that made it
I don't
come
know.
Together.
Sometimes you become friends out of proximity or coincidence or circumstance. And I bought that part of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do wish the movie was a little better. I'd like to see what Michael Angarano does next as a director.
Yeah. Any rate, that was our discussion of Sacramento. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to hear Nathan talk about his experiences at a New Orleans horror-themed film festival. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discuss the independent film Sacramento. Let's now get ready to don our horror hats as Nathan describes his experience in New Orleans at the recent Overlook Film Festival. First, let me read what I was able to find out on the festival's website. Quote, the Overlook Film Festival is a four-day celebration of all things horror held in America's most haunted city, New Orleans. Each spring, genre fans and cinephiles from the world over convene in the heart of the French Quarter, home to countless apparition sightings, voodoo legends, vampire curses, and even some lore related to our namesake, horror fiction's most frightening creation. And of course, that refers to the famous fictional Overlook Hotel from Stephen King's 1977 novel The Shining and Stanley Kubrick's 1980 film adaptation. We've been to the real hotel, Overlook in Colorado,
and,
remember?
Mm-hmm. I'll have you know that the very first year of the Overlook Film Festival, which was 2017, they actually held it at the Timberline Lodge in Oregon, which is where the exteriors from Stanley Kubrick's The Shining were filmed. And it's been in New Orleans ever since. This was my first time at the Overlook. It was my first time in New Orleans. And I had a great time. And, you know, horror people tend to be very, very nice and accommodating. And that was my experience. It was a really well-organized festival. Everyone was courteous. It relies on a lot of volunteer efforts, just like any film festival these days. So it's not a huge festival either. It has about 25 features in its lineup, new films. There are shorts programs. They have immersive horror experiences and author and artist panels that you can go to. I mostly stuck to the feature films, though.
So you'll tell us, because some of these films are either playing like right now
yeah.
or opening soon.
Yes.
So please let us know, because a couple of these I'm really interested in seeing.
Yeah, I would
say Clown in a Cornfield.
Well, that's mine. Love me some clowns.
Okay, I'll get to that. I will say, yeah, just keep your notes app handy and jot some of these down if they sound interesting, because some of them have been picked up by distributors. Some haven't yet, so who knows when they'll come out. But sure, okay. I'll start with Clown in a Cornfield, which we mentioned in our summer movie preview, and it's set to open on May 9th. And it's a teen slasher movie set in a small town. It's supposed to be Missouri.
With Frendo the Clown.
It's supposed to be Missouri, but everyone has Canadian accents, so you can guess where they filmed it. And yeah, Frendo the Clown is the main antagonist, and he starts hacking up all the Gen Z kids. And I was excited for this because it's from Eli Craig, the director of Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, which is a really fun horror spoof. But I, unfortunately, found this one to be extremely generic and not very mm-hmm. well made. But the audience I saw it with liked it clearly way more than I did, based on just their reactions in the theater. So I'm sorry to say that was my biggest disappointment of the festival. And my next biggest disappointment, I'm even more sorry to say, was the new David Cronenberg film, The Shrouds, which was the movie I was most looking forward to. So it stars Vincent Cassell as this widower who has developed a technology that lets people basically look into their dead loved ones' graves as their bodies decompose. And he gets involved in a weird international conspiracy plot with his former brother-in-law, played by Guy Pearce. And this is a very personal movie because Cronenberg made it about his own wife's death. Vincent Cassel even looks like David Cronenberg, like they've styled him with, you know, the silver pompadour. And it, of course, has a few genuinely provocative ideas about technology and sex and death. But I just kind of felt that it was weirdly airless. It just didn't seem to have the passion that I
Cronenberg
expect from him.
Style.
No. I mean, you know, his actors have that kind of deadpan delivery that he likes.
Do you
but,
think maybe it was too personal?
It might have been, maybe. I know some critics have really loved it. Some have really hated it. I was kind of in the middle on it. When it actually comes out, because it's set to roll out in theaters in the next few weeks, I do want to see it again because maybe it'll unlock the second time.
It's funny. I was let down. When I saw the trailer for it, I thought, where has Vincent Cassel been? Because he's so good.
And yeah.
So and I
he's
was looking
in,
forward.
He's good in the movie, I
was looking
say.
Forward to it.
Okay, so the next one, we're staying international here, from Norway, a movie called The Ugly Stepsister, which is actually playing at the AMC right now, and I believe it's on the streaming service Shudder. But it sort of has a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead kind of approach to the Cinderella story. So it's mostly about the stepsister who's doing everything she can to be, quote unquote, conventionally beautiful in order to attract the
a
dashing prince. And we were warned before the movie many times by the festival programmers and by the director herself about how graphic and gross this movie was. And I will say it does have some graphic gross out moments in it, but I wasn't as shocked by it as I was expecting to be. So, but take that with a grain of salt.
I was going to say you're not necessarily the typical theater goer.
I will say it involves, there is one scene that involves a tapeworm that I wouldn't want to sit through again.
Okay.
I'll say that. So it is kind of nasty, but I also found this one to be a little bit one note, but it's very well made and well acted. So if you have a strong stomach, check out The Ugly Stepsister.
And of course, I want you to get to the docs.
Okay, I'm almost there. Before we get there, though, I want to talk about this kind of little subgenre that has been developing in horror movies and thrillers, which is the movie that's set almost entirely in a car.
Oh.
And I saw two of them back to back at the Overlook Film Festival this year, which were of varying quality. So I'll start with the low budget one, very low budget, which is called It Ends. It's a debut film. And it's sort of a new take on taking a movie camera out into the woods and making a horror movie with your friends.
Blair Witch Project.
In this case, it's a little more polished than that, or deliberately polished. But it's got these 420-somethings who are on a road trip, and they come to realize that the road they're on does not end. And every time they stop, hordes of people come running out of the woods and attack them. So they have to keep driving. And it's got this great kind of Twilight Zone setup, but I
hope they gassed up.
Well, that's the thing. Their gas tank, like, it stays where it is. All these things happen. It's very supernatural. I don't want to spoil too much, but I didn't feel like it sustained itself all the way to the end. On the other hand, Hollow Road, which is the other car-bound
thriller. That's the Rosamund Pike.
Rosamund Pike and Matthew Rhys. Their parents, who are driving to a remote location in the middle of the night because their daughter has been in an accident. She's on speakerphone. They're trying to give her
but
advice.
But is it one of those scam ones?
No, but I will say that it goes from just being kind of a tense chamber piece to being something more unsettling and possibly supernatural.
So it's Hollow Road, not Hollow.
Hollow, H-A-L-L-O-W. I don't think that one has been picked up, but I really liked this movie.
Huh.
It really pulled me in. So I would say look out for that one. And okay, now I've gotten to the documentary portion of our program. So I saw three documentaries, all of them horror-themed. I'll start with the one that I liked okay, which is called Chain Reactions, a visual essay about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which just turned 50. And it's basically five chapters, each one with a different filmmaker or writer, talking about the impact that it had on them, how it influenced their work, and sort of what it means in the American canon. Stephen King is there. Patton Oswalt is there. My favorite of the talking heads was Takashi Miike, director of Audition and Ichi the Killer.
Yes.
The way that he talks about Texas Chainsaw Massacre is with such love and affection. And it really made me want to watch the movie again because I think it's one of the greatest horror films ever made. So that is for dorks only, of which I count myself among them. Next on the documentary docket at this year's Overlook Film Festival is a very disquieting film. Not exactly horror, but certainly real-world horrors are involved in this one. Predators, which is about the Dateline NBC series To Catch a Predator, if you remember that show.
Yeah.
And what I liked about this movie is that the director, David Osit, brings nuance to a cultural object that by design had no nuance, and it made me think differently about this as a cultural thing.
So in terms of a film festival, were there any directors or actors?
Yeah,
there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, actually a lot of directors came to talk about their movies. David Osit, the director of Predators, wasn't there, nor was the director of my favorite of the documentaries, maybe my favorite of the festival. It's called Zodiac Killer Project. Charlie Shackleton's the director. And he's known in film circles for making a documentary called Paint Drying, which is a single 10-hour shot of paint drying on a wall, which he made to protest the British Film Ratings Board. He made them watch it. It was sort of like a two-finger salute to them. And this movie has a similar kind of prankish quality, but I think it's a serious work. It's already dividing audiences, but I'll kind of explain how it works. So he, Shackleton, was set to make a documentary series about a very strange subplot in the Zodiac Killer investigation. And while he was in pre-production, the whole thing fell apart. And so this documentary, again, it's called Zodiac Killer Project, is him explaining what it would have been.
Oh.
And he's kind of narrating it over what they call in the game evocative B-roll. And so it's sort of a deconstruction of true crime. I've been describing it as the thin blue line for postmodernists. So I really liked this one. It is not for everyone.
That's a great tagline,
yes.
Nathan.
And then I'll close out with my favorite narrative feature of the festival, which was Kiyoshi Kurosawa's new film, Cloud. He is a master of Japanese horror. And if you've seen some of his other movies like Cure and Pulse, you will think you'll know where this story is going, but you will be very wrong. It's about a guy who resells stuff online. He's not exactly concerned about the quality of the things that he's selling online or whether or not he's ripping people off. And eventually he becomes haunted by, I guess, for lack of a better description, negative customer reviews. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
That one, the twists and turns of that one are a lot of fun. So, yeah, I would say of the 10 movies I saw, Zodiac Killer Project and Cloud are the ones that you should look out for.
Well, that's terrific. We will be looking out for them. And that was Nathan's roundup of his time attending the New Orleans horror-themed Overlook Film Festival. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed the feature film Sacramento. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from none other than Stephen King. We make up horrors to help us cope with the real ones. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.